Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Illinois Commerce Commission versus FERC. So, Mr. Burks?
Actually, Your Honor, Mr. Ross.
Ross, that's fine.
Thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the court. Lately, there has been a lot of talk in the news about the need to substantially upgrade the nation's electric transmission system. Years ahead of its time, the American Electric Power Company made an enormous investment in what is still today the nation's premier electric system. As the map to my left indicates, AEP's foresight in building a one-of-a-kind extra high-voltage network has provided the essential link between eastern and western PJM.
So you're Ohio, is that it?
Your Honor, I represent American Electric Power Company, and I'm also arguing on behalf of the Public Utility Commission of Ohio. Delivery over AEP system have saved PJM consumers hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, in electricity costs. And FERC has recognized that the success of the regional electric market spanning from the Atlantic Ocean to Illinois depends on access to AEP system. None of these facts are in dispute in the case before you. What is in dispute is FERC's ruling that AEP's investment in these EHV facilities can be written off as sunk cost, such that PJM customers no longer need contribute to the cost of these facilities, even though they continue to make ever-increasing uses of the facilities. FERC argues that
what evidence is there of ever-increasing usage?
Your Honor, the record indicates that since AEP's integration into PJM, uses of the AEP system and deliveries over the AEP system into PJM have increased substantially. There's that evidence in the independent report prepared that's in the joint appendix.
It's still heavily used by AEP internally, though, is it not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. AEP's customers make internal uses, and PJM customers are making ever-increasing uses. In fact, Your Honor, since the open access era, the third-party uses of AEP system have increased by over 200%, while AEP's internal uses have increased somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 or 8%.
But now you're seeking, if I understand correctly, you want a share of your capital costs reimbursed by the other companies.
Your Honor, right? We have proposed that the costs of the entire...
No, yes or no? Capital costs, you want capital costs... You want them to contribute to your capital costs?
Yes, Your Honor, just as they have in years past when they were paying to use AEP's transmission system.
But they're sunk costs, and isn't there a difference? I mean, if you were building new facilities which were going to benefit them, that's one thing. You'd be entitled to compensation. But if these are old facilities which have been paid for, then why should they contribute?
Well, they haven't been fully paid for, Your Honor. They're still undepreciated costs and rate base. FERC's and standard rate making...
Well, the whole thing has been paid for. You may have depreciation, but but you obviously paid for the facilities when they were built.
That's true, Your Honor. The
No further construction decisions will be made as to these facilities. All the decisions have been made.
As to these facilities, although upgrades to these facilities are continually made, and all the new PJM facilities that you're going to hear about in the next argument connect into these facilities and become all part of an integral grid.
When you joined PJM, you were aware that you'd already committed to those particular projects, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's a voluntary association, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, but we never agreed. AEP never agreed, and there is no FERC ruling in place that agreed that AEP's costs would all of a sudden be shifted back to AEP. Prior to the time that AEP joined, and for a decade or so before that, customers had made tremendous uses of the system and paid FERC-approved use, which recovered capital costs, regardless that they were sunk. And that has always been FERC's rate-making.
How would the public, how would the nation benefit from this reimbursement? Isn't it just transferring wealth from one group of consumers to another? What's the public benefit?
Your Honor, that begs the question that the writing off sunk costs and not fairly allocating them doesn't matter. And I think that
that's what I'm suggesting. How does it matter?
We think it does matter, Your Honor. People have long memories, and when utilities make long-lived investments in long-lived assets,
if you build a new facility, that benefits laps into the next issue. If you build a facility that benefits other members of the consortium, then of course they'll have to reimburse you. But
Your Honor,
is reimbursement for of a sunk cost? How does that help? How does that help the country?
Your Honor, as I was saying, people who make investments in long-lived regulated assets have an expectation.
No, but that means that if you make a new long-term investment, you will be very insistent on contribution from the other companies, and you'll get the contribution.
Your Honor, our point that is, if FERC can send a signal that previously approved cost allocations can be undone, because
how undone? I don't understand.
Your Honor,
breach of contract? They've broken a contract?
No, Your Honor, but throughout the country, all transmission rates are recovered. It's sunk cost in transmission. Facilities are recovered through transmission rates. That's always been the case. That's the case that AEP has been collecting rates.
I'm worried about imposing a kind of monopoly toll because the electricity passes through Ohio. So
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Well, they're worried about you're an intermediate link, in part, between, West and East, Midwest and East. So they're worried about every intermediate link sticking on a monopoly toll and jacking up the price to the ultimate consumer.
Well, Your Honor, we had proposed cost-based rates, not monopoly rents.
No, these aren't current costs. These are your sunk costs. These are not real costs, the way economists think of it, right? They're not costs you have to cover in order to provide the service. You're providing the service.
And transmission cost was recovered as part of the retail, from the retail ratepayers of Ohio and the areas that they're located in. Is that the case?
Yeah, and as a result, yes, Your Honor.
It was not charged separately as a transmission cost.
No, Your Honor, but
part
as a result
of the retail rate, right?
Yes, and as a result of FERC's orders, the transmission component of those rates has gone up substantially, and the retail rates have increased as a result of FERC's orders. They have shifted costs that PJM customers currently paid back to AEP's customers, and their retail rates indeed have increased as a result. So they are now carrying the full weight of the system, even though tremendous uses of that system are being made by other customers. And our point, Your Honor, is that if you can
They've always borne those costs. I don't understand.
They have borne a cost, Your Honor, and they have always, up until these orders, received revenue credits from the third-party uses of the system, which reduced their costs. So their costs have always reflected a contribution to the fixed allocated costs of the PJM other customers. That went away with this ruling, so that revenue credit dollars.
That was part of the revenue from off-system sales.
No, that was off-system transmission, Your Honor. We were able to collect a FERC-approved rate
what's the difference between off-system sales and off-system transmission?
Well, Your Honor,
similar, right?
Well, no, Your Honor, in FERC's world, they are unbundled. We charge separately for transmission, and we charge separately from power sales. And I should add, Your Honor, that a good deal of the power sales that are made into Eastern PJM are not by AEP generators. They're by third-party generators who receive access over our system. So the transmission costs are being allocated separately to the uses of the transmission system. Other parties are also making sales as well as AEP does.
I don't understand. These neighboring utilities are compensating you, I assume, for power that they're buying from you. You're not transmitting any power on their behalf, are you?
Yes, we are, Your Honor.
Unless they buy it from a generator in Ohio and it's transmitted to Pennsylvania.
That's precisely what's happening, Your Honor. All the low-cost generation in the Midwest, all the coal units in Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, that power is moving east to displace higher-cost units. It can only get there over AEP's transmission system and some other minor facilities that are owned by others. Those customers have always paid to use those facilities under FERC-approved rate regime that goes back as far as FERC has set transmission rates.
But you're reimbursed for your current costs of transmission, and if you have to build new facilities, then you'll be the other companies will contribute to those costs. So isn't this a windfall to give you the money for these sunk costs?
I would argue absolutely not, Your Honor. We have, as I explained, we do not are not able to leverage these assets to take all the benefit of the transmission system like we might do in an unregulated market. We charge regulated transmission rates for the use of our system, and we move other people's power. We sell some of our own power. We do not get the benefit of third-party generation sales back to our transmission system. So to the extent we're making people are making uses of our systems while paying for it, there's no benefit to AEP's customers in that situation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ross.
Your Honor.
So, Mr. Burks.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Assistant Attorney General in the Office of the Illinois Attorney General. I'm presenting argument on behalf of the new facility petitioners. So turning from the costs that were incurred by AEP on the existing facilities that you see on that map, I'm going to be discussing the rate allocation formula that FERC adopted for proposed new facilities that are designed and intended to go on the eastern portion of that PJM map that you're looking at, where all of those 500 kV red facilities are currently depicted. Now, whether a rate design is just and reasonable.
Is the only issue that you're raising the 500 kilovolt allocation plan?
That is correct. That is it. Well, it has two parts, though, because the first part is FERC had to show that the existing rate scheme was unjust and unreasonable, and then show that the one that they adopted was just and reasonable. So there's two parts, but they
and
both go to
that.
Do
you want them to use the same pricing formula that they use for the 345-volt or anything under kilovolt or anything under 500?
That's correct.
Try to estimate benefits.
So
you're content with that formula. You just don't want to have the 500 kilovolt cutoff. Is that your point?
That's correct. We don't believe that any cutoff is supported by the record or justifiable.
FERC prescribed a postage stamp rate over 500, right?
That's correct. They call it a postage stamp. We refer to it as socialization in our brief. It's also called a rolled-in rate. All of those refer to the idea that everybody in PJM from the...
Well, it's an average rate.
It's based on load ratios. So, for example, ComEd has 16% of the electricity on the system, so they would have to pay 16% of the cost of all of the new facilities that are at the demarcated voltage cutoff.
They used to call these distinctions average and incremental. Now they call them socialized and something else.
They do sometimes refer to incremental as a sort of a beneficiary pays type formula, as an incremental rate.
So what percentage would the... I'll call them the Western utilities. What percentage of a 500 kilovolt project would they pay?
ComEd has approximately 16%. Dayton's approximately 2 or 3%. And then AEP's is slightly below ComEd's. I think my rough figure is about 30%.
30%?
For the Ohio and Illinois rate payers.
And your usage of the entire PJM system?
It's based on the electricity load that they're responsible for. So ComEd customers in Illinois.
The whole system.
On the whole system.
The part that would pass through the 500.
No. It's on the entire system.
And
our position is that while we use 16% of the load on the PJM system, we're not using those facilities. The facilities that they're building, the new ones that have been identified specifically because of reliability concerns in a specific geographic area, in the Delmarva Peninsula, Washington, D.C., and New Jersey. And FERC recognized this in their order, in the order on rehearing in paragraph 55. They said, without these new facilities, we fear reliability concerns in those specific areas, so we have to build these facilities.
Well, isn't that just part of the business of joining a power pool? You joined the PJM power pool for various reasons, which aren't necessarily relevant here. And in so doing, if they're building 500 kV or above transmission as a sort of a backbone system, Don't you just have to take things as they come? I mean, well, why should you be specially fenced off here?
Well, let me address that in two ways. One is to really challenge the premise that a 500 kV system is the backbone. As you can see on the map, it might be backbone for a certain portion of PJM, but it's clearly not the backbone for where we live here in Illinois. In Illinois, we use 345 to transmit large amounts of power, and that has to do with historical and technical reasons.
Two backbones.
Well, there are multiple backbones. I think you have to look at the line.
They don't socialize the 345, right? So that's the issue. They don't socialize or average the 345. Why do they do it for the 500?
Why do they do it for any voltage baseline? I mean, it might make sense to do it for a specific line if you could show that it has wide regional benefits, but none of these lines are shown to have wide regional benefits. And if you look at the original cost allocations under the status quo formula, you can see that we were allocated none of the costs for these particular facilities, and yet now we've been shifted over $445 million of the cost for these particular facilities. So you can see that there's a large difference between what the data showed as to who needs these lines and why these lines should be built and what the actual costs are going to be. They're going to be imposed on us. Now, turning to whether we need to take the good with the bad, which was sort of an earlier question
Have you proposed a specific amount that you should pay for any of these facilities, or is it your view that it's zero, that you don't derive any benefits?
Well, we think that the original cost allocations were correct, that we don't derive any benefits from these specific facilities. The facilities we're actually talking about are in the appendix to our reply brief. At page 3 of that appendix shows this map with the new facilities that are going in. And so you can look at those specific facilities and see where they're located.
But what if they argued, your opponents, that, well, it's good for you to have greater reliability in New Jersey because you may have customers. Well, do you have customers there?
No, we don't.
You don't have customers.
No.
So you couldn't. So if there's an outage in New Jersey, that wouldn't affect your...
Well, as a general matter, I think what FERC is getting at is, of course, is a regional unified transmission system where power can be diverted in different ways. Now, that in a lot of ways is aspirational right now, and what they're trying to do is reduce congestion to allow even flows of power throughout the transmission system. But no, as the system stands now, an outage in New Jersey would be very, very unlikely to affect Illinois consumers.
You're representing the Illinois ratepayer here.
That's correct. Because
do you have any idea what the percentage impact on the Illinois ratepayer is of having a postage stamp rate as to number 500 kV transmission?
I'm not sure what the percentage increase is. The way the rate will be passed on to ratepayers is through basically directly through their electricity bills. Because of the filed rate doctrine, ComEd gets these costs from FERC, and it has a rider in its regulatory system with the ICC that allows it to pass on all the FERC-approved rates directly to the ratepayers.
So that'll be $445 million?
That calculation is based on the record item 301, which was the original cost allocations that were made using the beneficiary pays formula before FERC issued opinion number 494. So if you start there and you see that we had zero costs, and then you see what the costs will be under the socialized formula for these identified lines, it adds up to $445 million for the lines that have thus far been identified. Now, our position is also that we have a pretty robust system here in Illinois, and we don't foresee any new transmission of such a high voltage for a couple of reasons in the future, so that the new RTEPs that are going to be coming down the pike will also have a disparate impact on us, because they're very unlikely to benefit Illinois ratepayers.
You could have a change in technology, could you not, with higher voltages? And
well, because of the way our facilities have been designed with a 345 at the high end, it would be, I mean, we have some path dependence. It would be very hard to interconnect a 500 line there. And for this reason, I think, I mean, FERC says, well, we chose 500, it was under-inclusive. because it was at such a high level. But it's really not under-inclusive. It's just discriminatory. It just favors those utilities that have built at 500, and it disfavors those who have, for technical reasons, in the past, used a 345 voltage for their high end. I'm going to my rebuttal now, so if I may.
Fine.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Burke. So, Ms. Banta, are you going to argue? Are you arguing both issues or just the Ohio issue? Or?
Yes, both I and Intervenors Council are prepared to answer both issues. Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Carol Banta on behalf of the Commission. This case really highlights the challenge for the Commission in dealing with RTOs and the particular question of rate design in the RTO context, that there are, as Your Honors pointed out, it is an RTO is a voluntary system that the transmission owners come together for the coordinated planning and the coordinated dispatch because of their own business considerations of how this integrated system benefits them. But in
is
any
this system centrally dispatched in the west end as well as the east end?
Yes, PJM interconnection operates the transmission and dispatch for the entire system once the participants.
Well, I know it was centrally dispatched originally, but my question is,
yes,
was the central dispatch cover the west end as well as the east?
And the answer is yes. And with these complicated questions of rate design, there are always or often going to be some parties that feel like they're subsidizing someone else or that someone else is free riding. And that's the nature of any collective, or at least in the RTO context.
No, it isn't.
Well, it has been in the nature in RTOs.
Because with regard to the 345 or anything under 500, an effort is made to figure out the benefits to the different participants, and they're charged different rates. They're not charged the same rate. So there has to be some justification for mushing everything together. That's the second issue. That's not the sunk cost issue.
Sure. On the second issue. Well, the Commission said, now to be clear, with a 345 kilovolt facility, if the modeling methodology that was developed, again, the Commission found the existing rate unjust and unreasonable because there was no specific methodology. There was a principle, a beneficiary pays principle that everyone agreed on, but the methodology was constantly being litigated. So the Commission said,
I don't understand. The beneficiary pays system apparently works satisfactorily under 500. Why should 500 be some inflection point, and somehow
right
above that you can't figure out who benefits?
Well, to be clear, the Commission found the entire existing rate to be unjust and unreasonable under 206 because the
yes,
right.
So
then we go to step
500.
Two. Yes,
it
sure
accepts the principle that you make an effort to figure out who's benefiting and charge accordingly. You don't have a uniform price.
Right.
There has to be some reason why above 500 or 500 and above that doesn't work. I don't find, anything in FERC's opinion or in any of the briefs that explains, you know, what's the problem? Why can't you estimate these benefits? Is it true the benefits are actually zero in the West? There are no numbers in here.
Well, let me be clear about two things. First of all, with the 345 kilovolt, those can be rolled in and cost-shared, even under the beneficiary pays model, just to be clear on that. As to the 500, the Commission was acting at step two of the 206 analysis of fixing what the new rate's going to be. It didn't have to find that every other possibility was wrong. It didn't have to find that the beneficiary
pays...
No,
but it had to have some reason for thinking, either that it's infeasible...
No. Your Honor,
don't interrupt me. I haven't finished my question. It has to find either a reason why it's infeasible to calculate benefits. It has to either do that at the minimum. It has to do that, or at least has to find that there are, in fact, benefits to these Western utilities. I don't see anything in its opinion or in the briefs to suggest there are any benefits.
Well, to answer the first part, under 206, the commission, having found the entire formula needed to be redone, or the commission did not have to find it would be infeasible to use beneficiary pays. Just under 206, it could admit that that's an approach that would work and still be affirmed for having found another approach that would work. But going to the core of your question, the commission did find in its order that everyone agreed that 500 and above do operate as backbone. I mean, there was lots of evidence.
That's just a word. The question is, does it confer benefits on these Western utilities? Where in the FERC opinion is there any reference to the benefits conferred on the Western utilities?
The commission, the Western utilities...
Well, answer my question. Where in the opinions, the reconsideration opinion, the original opinion, is there any concrete discussion of positive benefits to these utilities?
Well, the commission doesn't parse out these utilities.
Well, look, answer my question. Is there, in its opinion, any discussion of the benefits conferred on the Western utilities?
Yes.
Where and when? And what does it say?
Well, it doesn't talk about the Western utilities in particular. It talks about the benefits of the integrated grid.
Yes, but the Western utilities say, and they said to FERC, there are no benefits for them.
But the commission...
Now, why doesn't FERC say, well, you're all wrong, there are benefits for you? Instead, it doesn't say anything. How can we uphold an opinion, a ruling, that doesn't have, that doesn't discuss the major issue raised by the opponents, which is no benefits for us? We don't want to pay $445 million for New Jersey.
Well, the commission says, and for instance, in the rate design order in paragraph 81, on JA-134.
So what page is this?
JA-134. We do not suggest that...
Wait a second. Let me find it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Where are you?
And this is part of it. In paragraph 81,
right.
We do not suggest that every 500 kilovolt project will benefit every load in PJM in equal measure, nor are we required to find...
No. Look, you're not answering my question. I'm not saying they have to benefit in equal measure, anything like that. Where is any benefit, one penny's benefit to the Western utilities? Where is that stated anywhere in this opinion?
The commission based this on its...
Where is this in the opinion?
Well,
is there a statement anywhere in the opinion that the Western utilities will benefit at all?
It finds that the entire system, no.
Well, no, there
not
is not.
Now,
is there some theory of electricity or something like that which says that even if, you know, you're serving some basically local market, you know, northern Indiana, western Michigan, northern Illinois, nevertheless, what happens in New Jersey, an outage there or something could really hurt you. Where is that? Is there a discussion of that in the opinion?
There is.
Where?
Another place to look is
where in the opinion?
In the rehearing order, paragraph 64 on JA-165. And while you're finding that page, the backdrop of all of this is a series of cases in FERC and in the courts about...
And where are they referred to?
I know that in the opinion it does discuss some of the...
Not on this issue.
Well,
now, what is it on 165 you wanted us to look at?
Paragraph 64, that these kinds of facilities are properly characterized as backbone facilities that benefit the entire region. The commission has an entire body of cases, and I know they're cited in here, and I am sorry I don't have the exact site. We cited in our brief, for instance, I think the Eastern Kentucky Power Cooperative case is one, and there are some cases cited within that called Western Massachusetts and Entergy. The commission has consistently in recent years taken the view that the integrated grid of an RTO, which again all the participants choose to join and choose to stay in, that there can be a very generalized view of benefits.
Where is that made concrete? Because the way you describe it is just words. It's a backbone. Everybody benefits from the backbone. You can't walk without a backbone. That's just words.
Well, backbone is a term of art in this context, and it does have to do with not only reliability,
look,
but
you're
bulk
saying
transfers.
That, but I don't see anything. I don't see any record evidence concerning potential benefits for the Western utilities from a 500 kilovolt facility in the East.
Because the commission doesn't, in the step two, just and reasonable analysis, the commission doesn't break down how it affects each participant.
I just want the commission to state flatly, there is a benefit to these Western utilities, and this is why. Now, maybe we can't quantify it, but this is why there is a benefit.
And I know that it does, because of its...
Please, what you know is not evidence.
Yeah. Well, certainly when the Commission's talking about bulk transfers of power and reliability in these kinds of system benefits, JA 133 at paragraph 78 is one place that it talks about that.
I'm sorry, what page is that?
Paragraph 78, JA 133. When the commission talks about the capacity of 500 kilovolt lines for large bulk transfers of power, again, RTOs create two-sided markets
that
allow...
Sure, but there's nothing about what are the... Of course it's more reliable. It's much bigger system. It's great. You know, it's great for the eastern utilities. They're the ones who use these 500... kilovolt facilities.
Well, it's not only for the east. The bulk transfer of power allows for the most efficient siting of generation, the movement of power between markets. I mean, the commission, one of the points of RTO policy, it isn't all about reliability. It's also about getting generation from one part of the country.
Looking at this paragraph, it says 500 kV lines have a transmission capability of nearly 17 times that of 138. I don't know how 138 got in there. But fine. What does that have to do with the benefits to these Western utilities that are arguing?
Well, if we go to the next page, paragraph 80, and the commission does say backbone facilities benefit the entire region.
That's just words.
Well, it's also FERC policy. I mean, it is...
Look. There's a sense in which they benefit the entire region, I suppose, because they benefit. Well, I don't see that. I don't know. All it says anyway would encourage development of backbone facilities benefiting the entire region. It doesn't even say that the current projects benefit the whole region. And anyway, look, it's $445 million. That's a big enough stake that the FERC could take a few minutes to explain, in its opinion, what the benefits are. Not the exact dollar amount, but how does a facility in one end of a region benefit the electrical companies in the other end?
Well, and the commission has, for years, I mean, in Order 2000, it talks about...
Look, they've got 93 pages of opinions in this case. Didn't they have room to have a discussion of what the benefits are?
The commission...
Couldn't they have squeezed in a paragraph?
Well, these orders didn't arise in a vacuum. They arise in the context of years of litigation that have...
We have a vacuum. We have a factual vacuum.
Well, and I think even before the ALJ, because of the years of viewing the larger lines that allow not only for increased reliability but for bulk transfers of power and more efficient markets, I think it's the backdrop against the economists used it as their backdrop.
The map shows these facilities are in the east. Maybe they benefit the west.
Well, they won't always be.
But
I mean, this is the policy going forward for any new construction.
Well, according to your opponent, this isn't discussed in the opinion either, they're not going to be significant 500 kilovolt facilities in the West for a long time because they don't interconnect easily with the 345s. They're not going to tear down all their
They might not connect there, but if a new 500 kilovolt...
If, but there's nothing about this in the opinion. We're supposed to review the opinion, not what you know, what's in some other bunch of opinions, which aren't incorporated by reference.
When the commission talks about backbone, it talks about...
Look, I wish lawyers would not use words like backbone.
Well,
that's
not
a metaphor.
It's
a way in which people instead of thinking, they use colorful language.
It isn't a term that comes from the lawyers, though. It is.
I don't care where it comes. It's a bad term because we're not talking about that.
For long distance transmission.
Huh? Yeah, it allows for. Cheaper generation in the West to sell into larger markets in the East.
Where's in the opinion? Is there anything about cheaper generation in the West?
Well, that would be.
You're just embroidering an opinion.
In the record.
We're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to say, well, the opinion is empty with all its vacuous talk about backbones, but the lawyers are smart and they've told us what's really going on. Like cheaper generation in the West. That's not in the opinion.
It is the background of all this and was in the testimony. Was all
it's
about
cheaper
that
because there are a lot of coal plants in the West, right?
Right now. And in the future,
that's
the cheaper generation could be elsewhere.
That's the present and situation. It may not endure, right?
That's exactly right.
Where is there a reference to that in the opinion? Is there some prediction coal is going to... Coal, because it's dirty, it's going to be replaced by something else, and then they'll start building 500 kilovolt plants in the West. Is that in the opinion somewhere?
It is the backdrop of the proceeding. But
I presume that Exelon is not an appellant here because they also own Philadelphia Electric, which is in the East.
I don't know the reason.
Good guess.
I don't know the reason for not petitioning.
And the commission is here representing the Illinois ratepayers. Right?
I believe that's right, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Banta.
Thank you.
So is Ms. Stetson going to argue, or is this your... Yes, okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Kate Stetson for the intervener respondents supporting FERC. I want to pick up, Judge Posner, where you left off, and I want to begin with two principles. One of them is at Joint Appendix 158, and that has to do with the benefits that any RTO participant receives on joining an RTO, production cost savings, increased system sales profits, improved reliability, construction incentives. Point two, I would commend to you...
How does that relate to anything?
Because of point two, I would commend to you Algonquin.
Point one didn't get us anywhere. We're on to point two. What's point two?
Point one, Your Honor, is that every member of an RTO benefits from participation in the RTO. That is a...
They benefit from building a 500 kilovolt plant in the East.
Ah, but that's point two. Point two, and I would begin with Algonquin, which is a D.C. Circuit decision, 948 F. 2nd, 1305. The D.C. Circuit in Algonquin noted
that's a rolled-in gas case, right?
Yes, it is. Where new facilities increase a pipeline's transmission capacity or the reliability of its service, they may benefit all customers to the extent necessary to justify a cost roll-in. That's exactly what it's about.
You lost me. How do ComEd's customers benefit from greater reliability in the East?
Because of the findings the Commission made at Joint Appendix 133 that the maximum transfer capability at 500 kilovolts and above is six times greater than a similar lower voltage transmission.
How does that benefit ComEd?
It benefits ComEd because all of those findings in the Commission's opinion, go to...
About 133.
Yes, and I am saying that they go to the reliability of the system.
Yes,
that
and
is
how
one
does the reliability of the system in the East help ComEd? I don't see that discussed here.
the reliability of the system throughout the RTO.
Doesn't the agency have to address the principal grounds advanced by the parties? And if a party says, look, there's no benefit to us from any of this stuff, doesn't the commission have to say, you're wrong, you will benefit. You'll benefit, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Judge Poster, I would venture to say that these petitioners, the new facilities petitioners, cannot say they don't benefit at all from any of this stuff. They are members.
We just heard that from Mr. Ross.
I believe that was an overstatement based on Joint Appendix.
Discuss that overstatement.
Joint Appendix 158. Every member of an RTO benefits from participation in the RTO.
Wasn't this proposal or this aspect of the order that we're talking about now, the 500 and above aspect of it, wasn't that originally proposed by the power pool, by PJM,
The 500 and above, it came in at a couple different guises before the ALJ, Your Honor. One of them was the PPP group, which proposed a presumption.
That's public power, right?
No, that was the proponents of purposeful pricing, I believe, the acronym PPP. PJM came in a post-trial brief, and it explained that based on historical practice, including, importantly, agreements entered into decades ago by some of the classic members of PJM.
Now, who are the classic? I was struck by that. Who were the classic members of PJM?
Those were the members that were part of the tight power pool that existed before 1996.
Primarily in the East, right?
Yes. Yes, it was.
ComEd, a classic?
No, I don't believe it was, but if I'm wrong, I'll correct it later.
The classics ganging up against the non-classics.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. It's a recognition that everyone
I mean, look, be realistic. These classics obviously are not interested in ComEd's welfare.
Then let me return to Judge.
Exelon asked to join, didn't they, originally?
They sure did. This is all voluntary. Let me return to Judge Cudahy's point, which is that PJM, the neutral operator, in a way, of this system, is the one that proposed the 500 kilovolt and above breakdown. And I would recommend you read Joint Appendix 582.
PJM is dominated by the Eastern companies.
PJM is
It's particularly sensitive to their interests.
PJM is
it's
the neutral.
The costs of these things to the West.
Is
right?
The neutral operator of this RTO.
Neutral operator.
And I would, because that is
nobody
what it is designed.
It. Nobody controls it?
It is the operator of the RTO. It is independent. That's.
Well, does Exelon have a vote?
It does have a vote, and it can vote with its feet as well.
What is the governance mechanism for PJM?
PJM is governed by a number of different stakeholders, but it is an independent entity.
If it's governed, it's not independent. It's subject to its governors.
The governors consist of everyone who is a part of the RTO.
Yes, but that's dominated by the Eastern utilities, right?
Well, Your Honor, what PJM cited at Joint Appendix...
Dominated by the Eastern utilities or not?
I believe it is dominated by a number of dominant utilities, including AEP's dominant system. Joint Appendix 582, Note 9.
Look, that's not an answer. Do the Eastern utilities have a majority of the shares or whatever the governance token is in PJM?
Do they have a majority of the shares?
Well, do they have shares? Or they have votes or what?
Your Honor, I am.
No, you don't know. That's fine.
I am not familiar with the intricacies of the process, nor.
Okay, if you don't know, you don't know.
Nor for this matter is it important. What's important?
Judge Cudahy.
I'm sorry, Judge Cudahy. Yes.
I say, how does AEP compare with Baltimore Gas and Electric?
I believe it's slightly larger, Your Honor. Note 9 in Joint Appendix 582 cites Solomon answering testimony. High voltage facilities help generators in one region reach markets in another, while at the same time enabling loads in one region to reach economic resources in another. An RTO is designed
What page is that?
Joint Appendix 582, Note 9.
582? Well, that's not part of the commission's opinion.
No, this is the PJM recommendation.
Where does the commission adopt that testimony?
The commission adopts the recommendation of 500 kilovolts.
Where does it refer to that testimony?
Refers to that testimony in its statement at Joint Appendix 158 that it benefits all in an RTO.
What is it? Does it cite that testimony?
I don't believe it does at Joint Appendix 158, Your Honor, but I must point out.
But that testimony is critical.
I must point out this fact. It is beyond reasonable debate, and you will not hear the new petitioning council say that there are no benefits they receive from this system.
They receive no benefits, and there is absolutely nothing in the commission's opinion to the contrary.
You will not hear them say they receive no benefits from being on the RTO. And that puts us in the
benefits from PJM. But look, once you say they receive benefits from PJM, from joining PJM, you imply that their costs ought to be related in some way to their benefits. If they benefit to the tune of $1 million a year, you don't charge them $1 billion a year. That's the problem. We don't know, because FERC hasn't told us, you don't know, and Ms. Banta doesn't know, what benefits, if any, the Western utilities derive, or ComEd, say, derives, that could possibly justify a $445 million hit.
What I mean to imply isn't that the fact that the Western utilities receive benefits from participation in the RTO means that their costs somehow have to be precisely calibrated.
No, that's
to their
why
benefits.
I used the example. If it's one, you would agree, I bet, that if they derive $1 million in benefits, $445 million is an excessive charge. You would agree to that, I hope. Maybe you wouldn't. FERC does have the power to hit him with a $445 million charge.
Judge Posner,
don't interrupt me, for a $1 million benefit.
In my view,
yes. And is it your
yes.
view that that is within FERC's power?
In my view, no. But I'm not
explain.
FERC. In my view, no.
Yes or no?
No, but I am not FERC.
FERC could not do that.
In my view, no.
FERC could not do that.
Your Honor, I cannot speak for FERC. I cannot.
Well, look, you've said three different things, all inconsistent. Do you think FERC has the statutory power to hit ComEd with a $445 million charge for $1 million benefit?
Does it have the statutory power, or would it be unreasonable for it to?
It would be unreasonable.
In my view, possibly yes. But the possibly is important because of Joint Appendix 158. If you were looking at just $1 million of what versus $445 of something else, that alone, viewed in that vacuum, would be probably unreasonable. Yes. The answer to your question is yes. But what these petitioners have to recognize is that these benefits go beyond money that flows to them from transactions that flow west.
How much does it cost ComEd if the east transmission system in the eastern United States goes out?
If it goes out, that's an excellent question, Your Honor, and I'm not sure I know the answer to it.
Is that a possibility?
One of the reasons that the RTO exists is to encourage that kind of reliability. So,
is that one of FERC's reasons?
I'm sorry?
Is that one of FERC's reasons?
Yes, Joint Appendix 158.
What, they talk about an outage in the east affecting the west?
No, they talk about reliability. And when you couple that with Joint Appendix 133, which talks about the virtues of these 500 kilovolt lines and the reasons that they are constructed and the benefits that they serve for the entire system, you have to roll all of those conclusions in. Understand that FERC's burden here is to show substantial evidence, and we know substantial evidence means more than a scintilla. I submit to you this is more than a scintilla. It passes the test, and it should be affirmed.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Stetson. So, Mr. Burks, I'm sorry.
Yes, Your Honor. I'll start with this idea that you have to take the good with the bad. If you belong to the RTO and if there is some benefit to belonging to the RTO, then any cost that might be imposed on you for any of their functions is necessarily... I'm sorry if I overstated, Your Honor. Once you get through some of the specifics...
It's also true that it's pretty damn difficult to figure out the exact cost of every part of a transmission system. Right?
But there are models that do estimate the benefits and the reasons for putting these new lines in. There are models that do, and they do show who's using the lines that are causing the congestion that lead to the new lines. So although it might not be, it might be difficult, it can be done, and it's certainly a better methodology than speculating.
Yeah, but it's not figuring out the cost of coming from the distribution line in your street into your house. That's pretty easy.
It might not be easy, but there's certainly
high voltage transmission. That's something else again, isn't it?
I wouldn't deny that the models are fairly nuanced and complex in order to do it, but I don't think there's any doubt that they are.
Well, they do it for the 345s.
They do. And FERC has approved the use of these models for anything under 500. Now, when they say that the reliability of 500 justifies the socialization, that is really analogous to saying if you build a 10-lane highway from Philadelphia to New York, because it's bigger, because it's more reliable, it necessarily benefits commuters in Chicago. And that's simply not the case. You can see who's driving on that highway. You can see who's using that highway. And you can see who's not, who doesn't benefit. And the idea that membership in the RTO is itself a sufficient benefit because of the reserve capacity that is available through membership in the RTO or the administrative functions of they move power throughout the system, we do pay for those functions. And we could get those functions through a power pool or through a contractual arrangement, and we get them through an RTO, and they do have some benefit, but they're also paid for. But let's look at the benefit of the regional transmission planning, which is what this
case
is.
So in, by way of relief, what are you seeking, a remand to FERC to take a closer look at these benefits, or what?
Well, there's alternative relief. One would be a reversal and reinstitution of the status quo formula, which was the beneficiary pays for all new transmission lines.
Change that, certainly.
They could certainly change that. They would have to show that the existing one was unjust and unreasonable. If they haven't met that burden...
Of course, you're talking about the current situation. Power going from west to east.
Correct.
Commonwealth Edison has got low voltage transmission because it's relatively compact. How do we know that's going to be the situation forever?
Well,
maybe FERC has got vision here and they want to have a core system that'll work for the next 100 years.
I think it is much more reasonable to assess the cost to those who we know will benefit now rather than those who may or may not, because nobody is saying that it's more likely that power is going to go in the other direction, may or may not benefit in the future. And if the lines are constructed and power flows reverse and there are beneficiaries in the future, then a new proceeding to show that the existing cost allocation is no longer just and reasonable.
This number, what is it, 450 million or something was kicked around here. How much does that mean to the average Commonwealth Edison ratepayer? I'd like to know. That's a more meaningful figure to me than these boxcar numbers that for these huge utilities don't mean a whole lot.
Well, that 445 is passed on to the average ratepayer.
Well, I know it's passed on, but how much does it amount to when it gets down to the ratepayer?
I don't know what the average increase in an electric bill would be because of the transferring cost.
Me, then how much it's costing in bulk to somebody or other.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And we're going to hear from Mr. Ross too. Okay.
Your Honor, to get to your last point, Your Honor,
your opponents didn't say anything about the sunk costs. It's my fault, of course.
To get to Judge Cudahy's last point, Your Honor.
To rebut, but go ahead.
Shifting upwards of $150 million of costs back to AEP's customer has raised retail rates across our jurisdiction somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 5%. We serve in many jurisdictions, so it's hard to tell, but somewhere in that nation. I would just say that longstanding FERC precedent has always allocated sunk costs.
Sorry, you're estimating 3 to 5% increase in customer
rates. Yes,
because
sir.
Of this
because of the shift back of about $100 to $150 million of costs, revenues that used to be credited back to those rates. FERC has always allocated some cost to current beneficiaries. That's always been part of longstanding rate making. So I would say that those customers did not receive a windfall over those years. They got a fair contribution from people who were making major uses of their system. What happened here is that, as you noted in the earlier argument, the majority ganged up on AEP and convinced FERC that that should no longer be the situation, and now Ohio customers have been punished. And last point, Your Honor, is when AEP voluntarily joined PJM, it never agreed to give up transmission revenues. It agreed that there were other kind of these unquantifiable benefits.
If we went your way, we'd punish the Delaware customers.
Your Honor, if you went our way, you would fairly allocate costs and replicate the kind of costs that Delaware consumers used to pay when they paid for each transaction. They no longer schedule transactions and pay individually. Our method was a fair way of allocating those same costs that they used to pay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you very much to you, Mr. Ross, and to all counsel. And we'll move to